Impro Mafia presents And Time! Welcome to And Time, a podcast for improvisers and aspiring improvisers. I'm Dan Beeston, Impro Mafia's resident tech guy and designer.
And I'm Natalie Bohensky. I'm currently on the organising management committee for Impro Mafia, and I take care of the marketing.
Lovely. All right, so first things first, what has been going on in the week of Impro?
Oh, it's been a quiet week. We haven't had any shows this week. I guess we're all starting to turn now towards the very exciting...
Except on Sunday, when we had a show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we did, didn't we? Mm. Oh, I'm sorry, listeners. We did have a show.
But it was just one.
It was just one.
It wasn't very good. I'm not surprised you forgot.
And obviously it made such an impact. No, I remember now. The man love. I remember. It's all coming back to me now.
It's always about the man love.
It is with Impro. There's just can never be too much natural love that dare not speak its name. Except we speak it very loudly from a stage.
And not very politely.
No.
Not like delicately bridging sort of the homosexual lifestyle and culture. I'm also just standing on a cliff and laughing and pointing like the bigots that we are.
I suppose we should probably explain. We had grudge match comedy football at the Stage Door Dinner Theatre at Bowen Hills. It went really well. We had about the same size audience as we did for the last Stage Door show, about 22, 23 people. But they were really into it and they really enjoyed the show. And it was a very high energy performance from all six players.
It amazes me how much that room packs out with just a small amount of people.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's like, could you describe it as a TARDIS? No, like an inverse TARDIS.
An inverse TARDIS.
No matter how few people you have in it, it still seems full. Not to say that we want to have less and less people, of course. It can hold up to 80 people, but just having 20 there felt really full and really energetic. And because it's really intimate, all of the people there are directed towards the stage, so they all have a really good view of the stage.
And sometimes when you're in the middle of a really bad scene, it actually feels like you're travelling backwards through time.
Or perhaps time even is standing still. So it was a great show, and Damien Lee, who manages and runs and acts in Stage Door Productions, has just been great to us. They seem to really be happy with the crowd that we got. They all enjoyed the show and ordered food, and many said they would be back, so hopefully we can continue building the business there at Stage Door. We have two theatre venues now, the Brisbane Arts Theatre and Stage Door, and I guess they would both be brilliant for their own reasons.
I love the Stage Door. It's got a very casual feel about it. So you don't feel like there's anyone in the audience judging you when you do cop jokes. Like the Arts Theatre, I've seen proper culture going on there. And you go in there and you're like, oh, I'm going to take my pants down. And then you're like, oh, I feel kind of like I'm being judged.
It's something to always keep in mind, I guess, because certainly the Arts Theatre has seen its fair share of lowbrow humour and performances. But Impro is an entirely different beast. And I guess while trying to cater for the different audiences that you might get, you can encounter some problems in, well, where do you go? How much flesh, for example, are you willing to show? And how much naughtiness are you willing to go to? So I guess the way that we're working it at the moment, it's still early days, but the Arts Theatre is a slightly more G-rated show. Of course, we did do the stripper scene a couple of weeks ago, so that perhaps tipped it into PG, even M. But we try to keep PG, and then Stage Door, we delve more into the M territory more often. But I think the audience there really responds to that well. So it's really good to get a good sense of how different our audiences are, what levels, what boundaries you can push, what buttons you can push at different times. And getting a good sense of that is very, very good for all improvisers.
Now, you and I were in a scene the other night at the Stage Door.
Really?
And a very interesting decision was made. Because generally when the audience calls out offers and they call out a gynecologist, for instance, we go, oh, that's sorry, we did that last week. And, of course, we didn't do that last week. We just don't want to do a scene about that because no one wants to see a scene about that. And usually the same rules hold true when someone calls out toilet.
Ah, yes. I remember that scene. I think it was because you and I, Dan, previously, in last week, had been discussing the broken toilet on the International Space Station. And I'd actually said to you, that's a great offer for a scene to me because you can
see. So you were pre-planning, basically.
No, I wasn't pre-planning at all. I wasn't thinking in terms of toilet. I was thinking a situation where you're in space, somewhere far away from a plumber, and you've got a broken toilet. That, to me, just screams humour. And there's a lot to be done with that. So when the offer of toilet came up, I thought, Well, I'd already thought of this idea for a scene on the space station. That's a way of justifying it so it's not completely filthy. And it's a way of actually taking a, what could be described as a dodgy offer and just transporting it to a different setting where you could actually do good improv with it. And that's what I was trying to do with that by going, no, we will take your offer, but we'll improve upon it and make it better. I can't remember how exactly it went, Dan. How did it go?
I think I repressed the memory of it. I think I had the funny... It got laughs, but I think they were for all the wrong reasons.
From my recollection, you came on stage at one point to do some fairly graphic mime work, shadow puppetry, using your fists as...
The turds?
Imitation turds, yeah. Yes. Which Wade, who was on stage at the time as the Russian cosmonaut, had no idea what you were doing. All of a sudden you were in the background spinning your wrists like you were doing some Tai Chi.
I wonder whether maybe I made some poor decisions in that scene.
It can be very off-putting, I guess, when you think, oh, we have to incorporate this toilet. But really, I think we'd already dealt with the offer by going on stage and saying, we have to fix this broken toilet. All of a sudden, you've accepted the offer, you've confirmed that it's part of the scene, but you don't have to focus on it. What it became was the fight between Wade's Russian cosmonaut and my sort of cowboyish American one. So that's where it went.
And I quite successfully and subconsciously managed to sabotage the scene from within.
But then we shouldn't just talk about ourselves. What else went on that was quite fun and exciting? Dan's looking at me with furrowed brow.
I'm just trying to recall. We had Tom Dunstan there and Alex. And
well, Tom's always a great player and comes up with some great lines. There was a scene that his team did. This is Tom Dunstan, Greg and Alex, and they did a play in the style of, which of course is a game where you take a well-known story and play it in several different genres. And they did Goldilocks and the Three Bears. And at one point... Liam, the MC, yelled out science fiction. Tom came on stage, beamed in, and said, Goldilocks, number 352. And I thought that was very clever, but everybody else seemed to think it was quite a bad pun.
Oh, it's a terrible pun.
I thought it was reasonably clever.
It may be clever. It's quite a clever, terrible pun.
Yeah. But where do you draw the line then? If you've got a really, really good play on words that's not too groan-worthy, should you drop it? Should you drop the P-bomb, the pun?
I don't know. That's a very... Because the thing is, if you do it and it kills the story, you don't want that. Now, the thing about a play in the style of is that you're constantly jumping from mini-scene to mini-scene, and you've always got that handle, so you're not really even creating the story from the get-go. So that's probably one of the few games where you can really get away with that sort of behaviour without crippling it.
Yeah, it's a lot less... I wouldn't... not cohesive. It's still reasonably... Or good ones, anyway, should be still cohesive. There should still be a bit of a narrative. The story should...
But you can't kill the story dead because you always know where it's going because you're replaying the original story to some extent.
Then you can probably get away with a few more little witty puns and...
I feel like I'm finding all the scenes that I wasn't happy with to discuss. That's probably not the best way to sell the show.
No, it's not, because there were some great scenes. There was...
There were some great songs. Oh, I did them. That's right.
Ew, Dan, I do all the singing games.
I was very pleased. I got pretty much all but one of the singing games.
And you got upstaged mightily in the Lounge Singer song, where you had to wander around the audience singing the airline flight attendant safety demonstration. And then everyone backstage decided to come out and begin dancing. And then a bizarre love triangle
That's
got played out.
That's where the man-on-man love came in.
That's
of
where
course.
The man love came in. We wouldn't want to leave the listeners without confirmation of when and where the man love occurred. It was Greg dancing with Alex, and I was dancing with Tom. Tom then ditched me to go cut in, and then started dancing with Alex. Greg came up behind him, turned around, slapped him in the face, and then grabbed Alex and began a pash, which was quite amusing.
And that's a wonderful demonstration of when you can split the focus because you can be listening and watching at the same time and you're not actually listening to the same thing. I wasn't doing anything particularly visual and these guys were playing out the farce.
It reminded me of where just that great team support can come in, especially when you're doing a solo scene, which can often be daunting for players and can be a bit confusing for audience members because they see people working together, bouncing off each other. All of a sudden, you've got to do something by yourself. At the Arts Theatre, in our first or second show, Tom Lynch had to tell a story. His solo challenge was to tell a children's bedtime story, to make one up. And he began telling a story which I believe you and Al, perhaps, or two players, then began acting out behind him silently.
Oh, yes, that was me and Wade.
And it was Wade. It was you and Wade. And so you began acting out the story silently. And even though Tom was saying things like, you know, and the boy and his friend, they were great friends and they were always happy together. Behind him, you two were undermining that by, you know, having an argument. So that was a great example of Tom committing to a very nice, gentle bedtime story, but then the other improvisers providing a, you know, a humorous focus for the audience. And the essence of humour is always telling one thing but seeing another, and that's a great way of doing that. And I don't think it's split focus, because the audience was still seeing Tom with one eye and seeing the story played out with the other, and I think the same thing happened with the lounge scene.
It was a very interesting scene, that one with Tom, because it was supposed to be just a solo scene, and generally we tend to leave people to their own devices in that, but for some reason there was like this gap where something could happen in the sort of the player landscape, if you will.
I find solo scenes really tricky because we're always taught, and when you learn improv and you hear improv, one of the big mantras is you've got to support your fellow players. You can't leave someone out there to die. You've got an idea to come in and help rebuild the scene or to save it. And so a solo scene, to me, often seems like an anathema to that, because you're actually telling someone you've got to go out there and do something by yourself, and if you fail, it's all your fault. I'm not against solo scenes, but I'm certainly not against... I'm certainly against people having to do it all by themselves, completely, with no room to move. I think if they are struggling and it becomes very obvious that they're struggling, they should either end it, I guess that's the main thing, have the wisdom to end it very quickly, or if they've done a couple of jokes, it's gone well, end it while they're on a high, or to allow other players to come in and support where it's needed.
I love solo scenes because no one can ruin them for me.
Yes, and you're a narcissist.
Yes, I love it. I can just stay up there and listen to the sound of my own voice.
I guess like anything, I don't mind it if I'm able to come up with a reasonably good idea in a couple of seconds. And sometimes, like, for example, your solo challenge at Grudge Match of singing the lounge song, I would have loved to have done that. And I was thinking, oh, what am I? I should have volunteered for that. So they can vary for me. So is that all from Grudge Match? Should we move on?
I think so. I think we're done.
It was fun. The next show will be the 14th of July, so be there.
So the Off the Cuff Festival's coming up.
It is. How exciting, and yet how depressing for me, as I will miss the entire thing for being overseas at the time. But this is
despite the fact all of the effort you're putting into promoting it.
Well, I am doing some of the work, but we do have a fantastic young lady named Michelle Yan, who has taken on the bulk of the marketing and publicity for the festival, and she's great. So she will be doing the bulk of the work, which obviously will come closer to the festival when I'll be overseas. So I'm helping at this stage, but she will be the girl. It's going to be good, though. I'm so excited about it. I hope that someone will be able to film it for me, because I'd love to watch it when I come back. Improv Melbourne with You've Got the Part, which is a self-devised play where the characters audition for the play at the beginning and then put on the play, which sounds really intriguing. And then followed then by Improv Australia doing Tabloid Musical, where they'll take a headline ripped from the daily papers and turn it into a musical.
That should be impressive. That's got Paddy Styles.
Paddy Styles is Improv Melbourne. And Liam Amor from Impro Melbourne will be performing. Impro Australia has Lynn Pierce, who literally wrote the book on Impro in Australia. She wrote.
But she's not in Tabloid, is she?
Yes, she is.
Oh, wait. So Tabloid's the Sydney show?
Yes.
Okay, now I'm on board.
Promotions and Marketing by Dan Beeston.
Oh, look, I just do the pictures.
You just put the names in the right places on the website.
Or not.
Or not, as the case may be.
I'm so glad that the printers send back proofs to Wade so that Wade can go, Dan, you put the wrong number here. On the price.
Ooh.
Yes. But that would have been all right. Well, no, we got proofs.
Ah.
So it would cost us an extra.
Which reminds me, I found another apostrophe error I was going to tell you a couple of days ago.
Oh, God, no.
But you seemed really stressed. So I thought I'd leave it till when we were recording the podcast so you couldn't have a complete mental breakdown on me. Maybe you will, and we'll just edit it out.
So after it could have been solved.
Oh, can it not be solved anymore?
No, they're off to print now.
Oh, well, then I'll just leave it up to the listeners to get their copy of the postcard and find the apostrophe error.
We'll be back in a moment after Nat dies.
And we're back. I'm not dead. I managed to beat him off, listeners.
I beg your pardon.
I beg your pardon, indeed. I just realised what I said then. I managed to fight him off. With my fist.
So Edge Impro's there, and they'll be doing...
Edge Impro will be doing Gorilla. On the Friday night, our opening night, Impro Mafia will kick off the show with international grudge match, which will be Emperor Mafia players and also some national players.
Oh, really?
Yep, and then we will have Playback Theatre, which is a Brisbane group that's been around for a good 10 years or so.
Now, I hadn't heard of them until just recently.
No, well, they don't really come, from what I understand of them, they don't come from the wacky comedy side of Impro.
Yeah, check out their website and it's all dramatic reenactment.
Yeah, it seems to be more getting in touch with moments from people's lives and using dance, mime, music and dialogue to recreate that. And it seems to be more of a community, how would you describe it? Rather than actually using Impro to entertain people, it's more... No, that sounded really bad.
Let me make a poor way to describe it.
Okay.
I'm quite interested in...
It's a purer, maybe, form of art. It's getting more to the drama of it.
I'm looking forward to seeing it and finding out whether it's a really sensible and delicate way of creating cinema or whether it's just a wank fest. Just...
I'd edit that out.
No. Hear me out. I've seen stuff where people have purported to be doing amazing art thing, and you go see it, and they just kind of wave their arms around a bit, and it's just arty. You know arty stuff.
Yes, you're referring to certain physical theatre companies around town, who I won't mention because they do excellent work. But look, art is subjective in all forms, and
street
performance
theatre.
Street theatre. Well, performance of all types is also subjective. I've had a lot of people, I do a lot of Terry Pratchett plays at Brisbane Arts Theatre, and people who may in fact even be related to me tell me things like, it's just rubbish, I don't understand it, it's crap, but we'll come and see maybe a farce if I do one of those, or even a drama. Performance is subjective, and so while you may get some people who look at that kind of show as being more on the wanky side, you might get other people who really enjoy it because it seems to point out to them a sort of human truth that they can really identify with.
Well, I'm very easily distracted. So that's why I like my entertainment in like 30-second grabs.
Eyes up here, Dan. Eyes up here. Eyes up here. No, put that down. Dan, put that down.
I took apart your table.
I would hesitate to use any term like that to describe a show I've yet to see. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
That's why I didn't describe it. It's potentially wanky, is
what
I'm getting at. It's very politically correct.
But then there's always a certain element when people do impro and we try to do something like a truth scene or try to do a more dramatic scene in our form of impro, and people get a bit nervous because you think, oh, it's a bit dramatic. I came here for wacky, wacky fuck.
And then you see other people who come on and see impro for the first time and they come out going, oh, is it really wanky enough? You're too flippant.
People are looking for that, are they?
Really? You really want to mime poo floating around the space station?
Looking for wank.
That's what entertainment is now?
It is really subjective. That's all I can probably say about that. But all reports that I've had of Playback is that it's very good. It's very well put together by people who know what they're doing, and it really impresses audience members. So that's, at the very least, what we're doing is trying to forge a bond with other impro groups around town.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
And it's going to be good. So that's the festival.
That's the festival. Edge is doing auditions?
They are, yes. Brad Daniels doing auditions for Edge Improv's core troupe. So if you are interested, check out edgeimprov.com.
Now, Edge has had a bit of a rocky journey, you know, over the last couple of years because they were very strong about 2 years back when they had some of the old guard hanging around. You had Colin Smith and...
Ash Moore.
And Ashley Moore. Jenny Winter was there. Mark Buckingham.
I think you'd probably say a lot of these people have left Edge because of life reasons, you know. Jenny and Ash have moved overseas. Mark Buckingham's moved out to Ipswich. That's a bit harder for you to mute.
Pretty much Collins. The same as moving to Canada.
Don't hate us, Ipswich listeners. Colin Smith's focusing on his acting, his paid acting, and that's fair enough. So I think what would probably be fair to say for Brad is that Edge is in a period of rebuilding. Rebuilding its core troupe. And I think what Brad's doing is really important because he's getting fresh blood in and he's revitalising his group.
Well, he's just started a rookie show up at the Kookaburra Cafe,
which is doing really well. And it's great to see he's got a huge crowd of young beginner improvisers getting up there and getting really excited and getting really keen. And
which we haven't had in Brisbane for ages.
It's really good to see that side of things coming out because, look, the more people we can get interested, the more flow-on effect it has for all of Improv in Brisbane, and I think that's our ideal, that everyone benefit. But certainly Edge, I think, has got a very bright future. Brad's put a lot of hard work into his workshops over the last few years, and I think what he's seen now is a great payoff from that. So he's seen lots of people get keen and be willing to take to the stage, and he's also got good people in Sandra and Kevin who are willing to help run it and develop the younger players. So I'd say a period of rebuilding for his core troop, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that. In fact, I think it's the right thing to do.
Mm. Well, now that he's actually got a sort of a pool of talent to start drawing from, I think I was a bit surprised that he sort of went with grabbing a core troop and then focusing on them without cultivating something underneath that, because he had, I think, five or six players who were working with him last year, and then he lost two of them at the end of the year, and suddenly he's had to start all over again.
It's a bit of a
troop.
Yeah, it's a bit of a hard.
Mm. But if you've got a pool of talent, then you're always going to be able to pick people out to move in. You're going to sieve talent out of a pool of people.
I guess Brad's motivation, and I don't know this for sure, and I'm only guessing, his model of a troop seems to be a really tight, close knit core group that really are so well in touch with each other that all their performances will be of a great standard, because they are always working with each other and always in tune with each other. And it means that he's got a very dynamic core group. I guess what you're saying is that it leaves him open to, if there was to be one or two or more people leaving because of life, you know, other things happen, that could leave him open to having a big hole.
I prefer our way, where there's a whole bunch of us who split up into cliques and bitch about each other constantly.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic.
I think that's much healthier.
The sexy detective guys, what are they on about? we'll edit that.
That's for episode two. That's a whole show dedicated.
I guess we could do a whole show dedicated on bitchiness and improv, but look, it's the theatre, it's the arts world.
What we do is we make a new segment and we bitch about a particular person each episode.
Can we start with you? Because they would. Can we do a phone-in poll and we'll just get everyone to... I'll get everyone to email me.
No one would have anything to say.
Oh, really,
I'm
Dan?
Flawless.
Really, Dan?
Flawless.
Listeners, write in to me. Send me
also,
an email.
Also, I'm the one who does the editing. So anything...
so it would be a five-minute show. Okay, here's everyone's criticisms of Dan.
And time!
It's all over. There was nothing. I think we should move on.
Well, why don't we go on to our topic for this evening?
Topic of the evening.
Which is the improv game Death in a Minute.
Dun, dun, dun.
Simple instructions. You do a scene that takes 60 seconds or roundabouts, and in that 60 seconds, someone or something has to die.
And yet, so often, it is so bad. It's actually one of my least favourite games, because to me, if you leave the death till near the end of the scene, it becomes a game of bridging.
Mm.
It becomes a game of how do we stretch this out? How do we find a way of killing someone? It can be cleverly done. And I think the best way is to play out a scene. If you're going to do it that way with a death closer to the end of the scene, is to play out a normal scene and then use some sort of offer that comes up in the scene for a reason to die. And, for example, I saw quite a good version done at our Impro Mafia Workshoppers graduation show where the players were all on a scuba dive, or they were about to go on a scuba dive, and so they were talking about their tanks and talking about equipment, and then one of the players started breathing in and said, "I was supposed to fill it with methane gas, wasn't I?" and then keeled over and died. So that, I thought that was quite a clever way of using an object that was in the scene to cause the death. However, like many other death in a minute, it suffered from a minute or 50 seconds of, "So, what are you doing? So, what are you doing? I'm doing this," because it's forefront in everyone's mind that...
Boy, nothing's very dangerous, is it? Let's just stand around not doing dangerous stuff.
Exactly, playing it safe. What about the other way, Dan? What about dying at the start of the death in a minute?
I much prefer that way. I know when I started, I loved this game because it always felt quite safe, because if nothing was happening, you knew that you always had the death to fall back on. But that sort of thinking means that you don't do the death at the beginning, where it would actually be exciting and it would be about dealing with the death. So I prefer doing it that way, especially if it's... I do enjoy just passing out at the beginning of the scene and letting everyone else deal with it.
It's quite fun. Greg Robotham is also a fan of doing that, coming on stage, going, "Huh! Oh!" keeling over with no indication of where he is, who he is, what time it is, what year it is, and letting everyone else deal with it. So in that way, you can play out a scene and create something. but you also have kind of put the climax at the beginning. So I don't know, I see them done well every now and again, but there's just as many times when I wish that we'd skip that game and do something else. I'm going to say that about every game we talk about, I think. Let's not do that game.
Except for Historical Replay.
That's a
Let's just do an entire evening of historical replays. I remember hearing a story when I first came along to Impro about Tom Dunstan had a team called Team Bastard. And their mantra was to be a bastard to every other team and a bastard to everyone else on their team. And they had to do a death in a minute scene. And the scene started and the first person came on and just keeled over and died. And the second person came on, keeled over and died. And the third person came on, keeled over and died. And the fourth person had to come on and establish what had happened.
That's genius.
All by themselves.
That's a really interesting way of playing it. I think I'd love to do that. The idea that one or two people, you have multiple deaths at the beginning or during the course of the scene. Wouldn't it be great to see someone come out and go, oh my God, Jimmy, you had a heart attack. I said there was something wrong with your heart. Why did you... Ah! And then having a kind of succession of deaths. Deaths in a minute.
Then you get a sort of a sci-fi thing happening, sort of a Children of the Damned sort of deal, where everyone's passing out and no one knows why.
It's an interesting way of doing it. That sounds really funny.
Yeah, there are ways to do it. There are a couple of other ways that I've heard of. Someone had a pig character in a scene which died. And that was their death?
Yeah, that's a nice way of doing it too, when it doesn't have to be one of the actors, it can be a...
But just as long as you over-accept the fact that the death is important. There's nothing worse in a death in a minute than when someone dies, everyone's like, he died. Oh, well, let's get on with it.
It's interesting you say that, because it wasn't a death in a minute, it was a different scene at Grudge Match on Sunday night, where your character Dan accidentally got shot out of a cannon because my character was too sick to go on and you were accidentally mistaken for them, got shot out of a cannon. And so Wade, as the ringmaster, when I came on to say, hang on, you've shot Dan out of the cannon, Wade reacted brilliantly, which I thought, which was not just, oh, well, I didn't like him anyway, which is a very typical improv reaction because deaths, as you say, are often not treated with the impact that they should have. Wade said, oh my God, we've just killed someone. I've just killed someone. This is really awful. And the audience began laughing. And Wade said, don't laugh. This is a tragedy. Don't laugh. So, of course, that made the audience laugh even more. And I think that's a really good point, is to if you do treat the death with gravitas, you don't have to turn it into, I guess, a bawling, crying funeral. But if you give it some gravitas, that might help actually make the scene work better rather than just, oh, I'm really sick of you, guy who works in office cubicle next to me. I'm going to stab you with my stapler.
It's like that joke. My dog's got no nose. How does he smell? Terrible. And that's just going to get a groan from an audience in an improv scene. But imagine if you did a scene which said, my God, my dog's got no nose. And the other person's like, oh my God, how did it happen? Quickly, we've got to get to the vet. No, it's too late for him. He'll never smell again.
So spinning it on its head, you're saying?
Just going through with it truthfully. See, the my dog's got no nose thing. The humour in it is in dropping the gravitas of the situation.
Or accepting the gravitas.
No, dropping it in that one. The joy of the original joke is you get, oh, he smells terrible. As though you've completely forgotten that he's without a nose. He has no nose.
I think, so death in a minute, final verdict?
I haven't got to the final verdict yet.
No?
No, I've got one more story about someone doing a different sort of death in a minute. I know that Andrew Nason actually had to do a death in a minute at a comedy club, and he did a scene where he got up, told some awful, awful jokes, and then left, and the scene continued backstage, where he's like, I can't believe it. It was so awful. And no one actually, like, stopped living. But it was a scene about him dying on stage.
That's a joke within a joke.
Yeah.
Layers.
Yeah.
That's very clever.
Very layers when you consider that he's actually a professional stand-up comedian.
Exactly. It's like an Escher painting. it's the Escher of Impro.
It's a riddle. We seem a mystery.
Maybe every week we should give an award to the person who is the most Escher of Impro that show. So the person who has the most layers within their scene.
Oh, I'll never get that award. I wear all my layers on my sleeve.
Oh, well, you're a very honest, truthful player, Dan.
Yeah. So, death in a minute. I'm used to be very fond of it. Now I find that the tag of having the death is a bit like signalling to the audience what's going to happen. So best to get that out of the way and not make the scene about dealing with the death or dealing with the what happens after the death.
So what's a good way? What's something that we might be able to say that would help beginner improvisers perhaps dealing with this scene, as it will come up a lot for them? What's the best way of tackling it? Dying first?
Shoot first, ask questions later, I reckon. If you don't know what to do in the next 30 seconds before someone dies, have a death anyway. Die, kill someone, then deal with why you did it. Because even if you don't know why you did it when you did it, you'll find out in the duration of the scene.
And play characters. I think that's the other really important thing for this scene. Don't just stand around going, oh, so what are you up to today? I don't know. What are you up to today? I don't know. Stab. Actually,
if you're going to be dead in Scottish.
Yeah.
And time! You have been listening to Natalie Behensky. Natalie's blog is at girlclumsy.com.
Read it.
I'm Dan Beeston. I have a website at invisiblespiders.com, but there's nothing much on there at the moment. For news about Impro in Brisbane, go to impromafia.com. Thanks to David Peachy for our theme music. Hosting for And Time is proudly provided by CivicNet Web Design. And if you're going to choose any, if you're only going to choose one to see, oh no, actually ignore that. Don't go to that one.
Why are you telling people? Can we edit this out, Dan? I think this is... Stop.
I'll edit that out.
Edit that out.
Okay.
Yeah. If okay. You're hearing this later, Dan, I'm speaking to future Dan. Future Dan, edit this out.
Fair enough.